Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Three of the five wildfires burning in Los Angeles County, California, are 0% contained. At least seven people have died in the Palisades and Eaton fires, and authorities say at least 9,000 structures have been damaged or destroyed in those two wildfires. This woman in Altadena lost her home.
We had everything, like the sentimental things. Like, my mom passed away. I had only a few things of hers left. My wedding dress, our wedding album, we left everything.
L.A. Fire Chief Kristen Crowley.
If I had 1,000 engines to throw at this fire, I honestly don't think 1,000 engines at that very moment could have tapped this fire down.
CBS's Chris Van Cleve.
At points, it's so dark, you wouldn't even know that it's the middle of the day here in California. I don't know how this neighborhood survives based on, it's just out of control fire. There are firefighters here, but I don't even know where you would start.
Water service is back in some areas of Richmond, Virginia, since a storm knocked out the city's water treatment plant on Monday. But a boil order is in effect. Richmond Mayor Danny Avula says the water system is now fully pressurized and they can start water testing.
The goal is two consecutive negative tests 16 hours apart, and that is the point at which we can raise this boiled water advisory.
President-elect Donald Trump's sentencing in his New York criminal case will take place tomorrow as a divided Supreme Court rejects his bid to delay sentencing. CBS's Jan Crawford.
This was Trump's last-ditch effort to try to stay it because he had already lost, taking it all the way up through the New York state courts. And tonight, in a brief unsigned order, the justices said Trump's sentencing could go forward.
Judge Juan Merchan has said he will not give Trump jail time. Also, an appeals court denies a bid to block the public release of special counsel Jack Smith's report on the Trump January 6th probe. Former President Jimmy Carter is laid to rest in Georgia after his state funeral in Washington, D.C., where he was eulogized by President Biden.
I miss him, but I take solace in knowing that he and his beloved Rosalynn are reunited again.
WSB's Jonathan O'Brien reports.
Inside the packed sanctuary of Maranatha Baptist Church, Carter's personal pastor, Tony Loudon, remembering the nation's 39th president as a servant leader who had an impact around the world. Loudon challenging the congregation to carry on the former president's legacy.
Go out and do something for somebody else. Go build a fence. Go cook a cake. Do something for somebody else.
The service was limited to extended family and local close friends. People lined the streets to pay their respects as Carter came back to Plains for a final time. Jonathan O'Brien for CBS News, Plains, Georgia.
This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
The Packers prepare for Philly. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Green Bay Packers face the Eagles in Philadelphia Sunday in the wild card playoffs. The Eagles have one of the top-ranked defenses in the league under coordinator Vic Fangio. I asked Matt LaFleur what makes them so tough.
You just don't see a whole lot of open space, a lot of gotcha plays. You're going to have to earn it because if they get you in third and long, it's a nightmare.
College basketball, two of the Badgers men's team dealing with injuries. Max Klesmet in a walking boot after injuring his right ankle. Nolan Winter, able to practice despite suffering a deep cut to his finger the other night. Wisconsin hosts Minnesota Friday night. NBA, the Bucks with a 121-105 blowout over the Spurs. A.J. Green with 14 points asked, how do you defend 7'3" Victor Wembanyama?
Just be physical and crawl up under him, try to make him uncomfortable, stab at the dribble. That's what coaches wanted us to do, and I think that's how you got to try and guard them.
That's the Bucks' A.J. Green with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. One of the celebrities forced to evacuate their home was actress Jamie Lee Curtis. The Associated Press reports that the last showgirl actress has pledged $1 million to start a fund to help those in Southern California affected by the fires. Celebrities who have actually lost their homes include Mandy Moore and Billy Crystal. The historic Will Rogers home in Will Rogers State Park have also been lost. Nikki Glaser says she was paid handsomely to host the Golden Globes last weekend, but she also told Howard Stern that she was paid less than her male counterpart. counterparts who had previously hosted. 2023 host Jared Carmichael said in his monologue that he received $500,000. Glazer said she would have hosted for free to prove herself and is hoping to make more next time. Nikki Glazer was the first woman to host the Golden Globes solo. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Peach Wabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Lingering flurries and snow showers through the evening, some clearing overnight, lows upper teens. A mix of sun and clouds for tomorrow, highs in the mid-20s. Dry Saturday, more snow possible late Saturday night and Sunday. Warmer Saturday, high in the upper 20s with falling temps Sunday. Currently 21 degrees.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Friday, we'll ask former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel about the both legal and legally challenged ideas being bounced around in the final days before Trump takes office.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6. This is 93.5 The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome, if you're just joining us. Welcome back, if you've been with us for the first hour. My name's Maggie Dawn. I'm host of the Maggie Dawn Show right here across the Civic Media Radio Network. Really excited today because I've got my special guest co-host, Tom Paulswitz, one of the most reasonable men in politics, a Navy veteran, and a two-time candidate in the 5th Congressional District here in Wisconsin. And we are joined in studio by a former colleague, good friend. Let's see if I can get all of these credentials right. You are a former state representative, a former county board supervisor, and a former county clerk.
And you left out former state senator, which
most of the time. Yes, most of the time. His name's Joe Czarnecki. Welcome to the show, Joe. It's such a pleasure to have you.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.
Very excited. Haven't seen you since I left the county. So this is a bit of a reunion of sorts as well for us. And small little, this is the small walkie of it all, if you will. And that is that Joe's son and I both went to law school together.
Yes.
How's he doing?
He's doing very well, actually. He's teaching. Yeah, he's at Case University in New York, and he's going to actually move to Chicago next semester.
That'll be lovely.
Got accepted as the dean of the law school at Kent. Is that the law
school? Yes, okay. Chicago, Kent. Well, that'll be easier for he and I to catch up. Again, welcome, Joe. Joe, you wrote an incredible memorial to President Jimmy Carter for the Milwaukee County Democratic Party. If you're listening, folks, we're going to add that to our show notes for today so you can go check it out for yourself. But tell us how you first met President Carter, Joe, and what that was like.
Well, I was a college student when I first met him back in February of 1975. I was active in the College Democrats at UWM in Milwaukee, and we had our state Young Democratic Convention actually in Eau Claire in February of 1975. It was a beautiful below-zero weekend.
Sounds about right.
And we had been trying to get a keynote speaker, and your older folks remember there were many Democratic candidates for president back then, and we invited them all, and Jimmy Carter was the only one who accepted to come and speak to us. So he gave our keynote speech in the evening, and after the speech, some of us stood around and talked with him. He gave his famous, "I'm Jimmy Carter, and I'm running for president" speech.
Yep.
It was a great speech, and many of us were very much impressed with him. And so we were talking with him, and like good college students, we said, "Well, when you're done, we've got a party up in our room. You want to join us?" And he said, "Well, I've got to meet with some folks, but, I'll try and stop by later." And we figured, he was just saying that.
Right. Being nice.
And then later in the night, I don't even know what time it was, but there was a knock on the door, and we thought, well, it's just more partiers coming by. And
where were you? Were you in like a very classic house?
No, we were in a Holiday Inn, I think.
Oh, yeah. Even more highly suspect, right. The hotel room.
Yeah, it was a hotel room of a Holiday Inn, I think.
Yeah.
He stopped by and came to the door. We just thought it was more partiers. Somebody answered the door, and there was Jimmy Carter, and he said, "Hey, I hear there's a party up here."
Unbelievable.
And he worked the room. He shook hands with everybody in the room, and we offered him a drink, and he informed us that he didn't really drink except for an occasional glass of wine with his wife, Rosalind, and shook hands with everybody in the room and, you know, kind of left then. But many of us were impressed, and, you know, then, again, I didn't see him again until that summer when he came to the State Democratic Party convention in Wisconsin, and that's when I became a volunteer on his campaign.
That is how politics used to work. You know, folks, I'm talking with Joe Czarnecki. He's been serving as an elected official in the state of Wisconsin for many years, now retired. He met Jimmy Carter back when he was in college, and the former president stopped by the hotel room after that meeting to say hello to everybody at the after party, if you will. I'm going to toss it over to my great co-host, Tom Paulswitz. Joe, as you know, Tom, we were talking before the show that you and your wife both got very involved with Habitat Humanity. Tom, do you have a couple questions for Joe?
Yeah, Joe, thinking back on that time, what was the thing that stood out to you most? Because that was an interesting election. It was right after, you know, Ford had pardoned Nixon, and, you know, things were really up in the air as far as what direction our country was going to go. But what really stood out about him in that campaign that really led you to say, this is the person we need to elect next?
Well, as Maggie mentioned, politics was a lot different then. Yeah. I remember, again, I was a volunteer on the campaign, and I remember one of the times he came to Milwaukee, and the campaign called me up and said, well, can you meet him at the airport? And I said, yeah. He says, well, he's going to be meeting some people in Milwaukee. Can you drive him around town? And again, this was, you know, I don't know, probably in early 76, before the Wisconsin primary.
Yep.
And you know, before presidential candidates had Secret Service details and everything. So I met him at the airport, and he gets off the plane carrying his own garment bag.
Wow.
No one with him.
No entourage?
No entourage. Yep.
Right.
It might speak to the long shot that Carter, like, at the time, right? Nobody thought it was going to be Jimmy Carter.
No, and I met him with one other individual, and it was an early morning flight. I don't even remember where he was coming from, and he said he hadn't had breakfast yet, and so we had breakfast at the airport. I still remember he had a cheese omelet.
Oh, is that cute?
Yeah, I think I had toast because I had like $2 in my pocket then, and that was it. So I drove him around Milwaukee. I drove him around with a reporter from the Milwaukee Sentinel. We went to the Journal and the Sentinel. We went to a couple of other places. And again, it was real informal. And we went to a reception at somebody's house. And we had to stop and pick up my wife then. We had just been married. And we picked him up and... my wife was going to get in the car, and this is one of my favorite stories about the real Jimmy Carter. I had a very small car. I had a Chevy Vega.
Oh, so it was tiny.
Me, Jimmy Carter, and a Chevy Vega, and we picked up my wife to go to this event at a person's house, and she goes to get in, crawl in the back seat of the car, and being such a gentleman, he says, no, you can't sit in the back seat. I'll get in the back seat. You sit in the front. And he crawls in the back seat of this little Chevy Vega.
With the seats that flip up.
As we drive to this reception at a supporter's home, was sort of a meet and greet. So, I mean, that's
different time.
That's one of the things I really like about him is, you know, a lot of little personal interesting stories like that.
It is both a demarcation of the different time, but I think a reflection of very, in a very real way, the man himself, right? It could be today, and if President Carter were still with us and he was physically able, he'd still be pretzeling himself into the back of the Chevy Vega, I'm certain, right? Tell us a little bit about your involvement with Habitat for Humanity and how you and your wife continued your relationship, if you will, with the Carters.
Well, we've been contributors to Habitat for Humanity. I guess one of my big disappointments is I never got a chance to build a house with Jimmy Carter.
Yes.
That's something I always wanted to do. And he did build homes in Milwaukee in the 80s. And there are still people in Milwaukee who built those houses with him who are still living in those houses. And I think that that's something that's remarkable about President Carter is he will always have that legacy of people who worked next to him to build a house that they live in and still live in today. And I think that's one of the remarkable things. And that's one of the reasons we got involved in Habitat for Humanity was because of the good work that he did there.
Just incredible. Folks, I'm joined today by Joe Czarnecki, former state representative and senator, former Milwaukee County Board Supervisor, and former Milwaukee County Clerk. Met President Carter on the campaign trail, ended up volunteering for his campaign, and met President Carter and Roslyn numerous times over the rest of your adult life, given your involvement with Habitat for Humanity. Give us a sense of your impressions, Joe, of President Carter's legacy. And I really, as you and I chatted preceding your interview today, I really view this sort of in two pieces. In the end sum, it's one legacy. But I really think of it as What was President Carter's impacts and what's his legacy as a president, his term as president? But more broadly, then, you really cannot separate his presidency from all of the great service to not just Americans, but humanity in the 40 plus years after his presidency. What are your thoughts when you think about President Carter's legacy?
Well, I think there's two things about his legacy. One is, as you know, Jimmy Carter personally, and then the other as his presidency. And personally, I think it's very interesting. When Carter left the White House, he wasn't a popular guy.
Right.
And I remember we went down to Plains, my whole family, my kids were young then. I think my daughter might have been three, my son's seven. And we met with President and Mrs. Carter at Maranatha Baptist Church to go to the church service and to go to his Sunday school class. And that wasn't as popular as it was later in his life. And I think at the Sunday school class, there were maybe six or eight other people besides wife and I at that class. And the people at the church were just wonderful. They took our kids into a class for the kids. And, you know, it was so much different. And after the church service and the Sunday school class, President and Mrs. Carter talked with my wife and I and our kids for the longest time after church. And one of the most, I think, almost painful things was him telling us about building the Carter Presidential Museum and Library, and told us that, you know, he was sad because one of the things he had to do was raise money to build it. But he's kind of sad because he said he raised more money from people from other countries than he did from people from the United States in order to build it.
Which, remarkable.
Which was sort of how people felt about him back, you know, in the 80s.
In the immediate aftermath.
Right after he left presidency. And that changed, obviously, over the years in his personal life and his involvement with the Carter Center and other things. But his presidency, again, was much more remarkable than people, I think, give him credit for. I mean, he created the Department of Education. And if you look at the United States moving forward, what's more important than education?
Yeah.
He created the Department of Energy.
Yep.
He was the you know, one of the greatest environmental presidents. He put solar panels on the White House, which Ronald Reagan took down. But, he did so much. He was
visionary in many respects that I don't even think today we can fully appreciate. We're going to have to take care of a wee bit of business, Joe. My special guest today, Joe Czarnecki, former colleague of mine, former county clerk, county board supervisor, state representative, and state senator, a man who's met the president, Jimmy Carter, and his wife, Rosalind, many times. We continue our discussion of President Carter's legacy with my special co-host, Tom Paulswitz, after these brief messages right here on The Maggie Dawn Show. Join us, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-75-CIVIC.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
The Todd Alba Show.
Donald J. Trump has been officially certified the winner of the 2024 election the way that the Constitution dictates.
You see how simple that is? There's a vote. You certify the results. Democracy moves on. You might not like the results. The person I wanted to have elected didn't win. But that's the way democracy works. Unlike 4 years ago on January 6th, where rioters stormed the Capitol.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Matt Nair on Air.
It is our 1 year anniversary here on Matt Nair on Air. Thank you, Greg and Calvin, for being on this journey with me. It's been great.
Thanks for having me. I can't speak for Calvin.
I'm always thrilled to be here.
Unbridled.
The enthusiasm brimming over from you, Calvin. I'm overwhelmed. Thank you.
Matt Nair on Air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Out here in the middle of these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on earth. That's how it feels when you're struggling with your mental health. But you don't have to feel alone. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
93.5 The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Had a bad day again. She said I would not understand. Left a note and said, I'm sorry, I had a bad day again.
Welcome back, everybody. My name's Maggie Dawn. I'm host of this, The Maggie Dawn Show, which you can hear Monday through Friday across the Civic Media Radio Network. I broadcast to you from 5:40 a.m. across southeastern Wisconsin. That's WAUK. But do not worry if you're not in southeastern Wisconsin. Your local Civic Media Talk Radio affiliate has got this show. And if you are outside of that network area, you can always download the Civic Media app or watch us on my Facebook page at Maggie Dawn Show, or on Civic Media's YouTube page. Hello to everybody that's watching and listening on one of those platforms. I got a great guest co-host with me today. His name is Tom Paulswitz. He is himself a Navy veteran, just like President Carter, whom we're memorializing today, with our special guest in the studios with me, Joe Czarnecki, a former county board supervisor, county clerk, state rep, and state senator, who worked and met with the president and his wife many times over the course of your life. Tom, I'm going to kick it to you, especially as a Navy veteran. What questions do you have for Joe this afternoon?
Yeah, so far, Joe, great stories. I mean, it's really interesting to see on the inside from somebody that you can only usually see on the outside. One of the things I've been thinking about, though, is, as we've gone through this memorial of President Carter is, he had such a great character. He was a kind person. He cared about people. And one of the things I saw was his election, because I was in high school when he was elected. His election was almost a rebuttal to what had happened in the Nixon administration. And people really wanted character again. People really cared about the person and wanted somebody who was honest and had integrity. And somehow the Republicans were able to, portray him as weak, which to me was, all the great things that he did and all the things that he was able to accomplish. But the Republicans had really made out to make Reagan look so strong, and therefore in comparison, President Carter look weak. Were you able to have a conversation with him about that, how he felt about that, and what really happened in that 1980 election?
Mm. Well, a lot of things happened in 1980 that were not pleasant. First of all, we had the Iran hostage crisis,
yes,
which was something that I think caused his defeat. The other thing I think was the challenge from Ted Kennedy in the primary.
Yes.
Those two things I think were things that probably doomed his 1980 reelection bid. I think he probably could have survived one or the other, but I think the combination was something that really doomed his campaign at that point. I mean, I worked on the 1980 campaign as well. I was a Carter delegate to the 1980 Democratic National Convention, and it was a very spirited, very difficult convention. You had the Carter and the Kennedy
factions. Yeah,
they were obviously against each other, and some of us were friends, and so it was a very difficult election for a lot of us. In fact, for me, I remember the 1980 November election was bittersweet, because that was the year I was first elected to the Wisconsin Assembly in that November election, and Jimmy Carter lost, and Gaylord Nelson, our great senator, also lost that election in 1980.
Yes.
So I remember that November night as being a very bittersweet night.
I do see some bizarre echoes to our current moment in a way.
Yes.
Maybe not bizarre, but just echoes. Of course, the distinction is Carter was a relatively young man, whereas Joe Biden took the Oval Office much, much, much older. Do you see those same echoes, Joe? Where are you at, especially, watching the funeral this morning? Right. And his grandson was the first eulogizer of the president, the former president. And one of the first things he said was that the thing that plagued President Carter most of all, in addition to all of his work on the environment, on housing, on disease eradication, on the national parks, it goes on and on, was that for the last 20 years, he was most fundamentally disturbed and concerned about the chasm between the haves and the have-nots, the ultra-wealthy and working people. Where are you at in this moment as we memorialize the life of President Jimmy Carter and are about to welcome into the Oval Office again Donald Trump?
Well, I just hope that President-elect Trump and some of his supporters were listening this morning to some of those speeches. I think that perhaps some of the eulogizers were speaking to them. Mm. Maybe not, but if they were listening to what President Biden said about character, if they were listening to what Jimmy Carter stood for, honesty up front. I mean, again, I remember that from his speech. I'll never tell a lie. I'll never be a betray a trust. I'll never make a misleading statement. Those were his President Carter's statements. And he said that in his campaign speech many times. And he said, if I ever do any of those things, don't support me. And he never did any of those things. He was always honest and upfront. And I think that was one of the things that might have been harmful to his political career.
Truth-telling in politics comes with a set of risks.
Well, yeah, and, yes. You should always tell the truth. And I think most politicians decorate the truth from time to time.
Ooh, I like that expression. I'm right. Decorate the truth. Joe Czarnecki on January 9th. I'm using that.
Yes. Yeah. And again, I don't think Jimmy Carter ever did that. And I think it was to his detriment politically many, many times. But I think overall, I think people are now seeing him for the great person he was. Maybe he wasn't the world's greatest politician, but he was a wonderful person.
And I think that is indisputable, regardless of what you think about his presidency. The man was a man of great character who cared deeply for his fellow humans. Tom, I'll give you the last question this afternoon.
Well, I think, overall, if you could sum up what Jimmy Carter meant to you, what would you say?
Well, he was an inspiration to me. And again, one of the reasons I decided to run for elective office. And if you look at my early campaign literature, you'll see it's all green and white, just like Jimmy Carter's. I copied that.
Awesome.
He was a Navy veteran. My father was a Navy veteran in World War II. So there were a lot of things about him personally that inspired me to become involved in politics. And I'm just grateful to have the chance to have known him on a very small basis. We weren't close personal friends, but I got to meet him many, many times over the years. And it was a wonderful experience.
Folks, that's Joe Czarnecki, the special guest of my guest host and I today, Tom Paulswitz, here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Joe, of course, a life of service to the public, which I thank you for. It was a pleasure to serve with you for the citizens and residents of Milwaukee County. Thanks so much, Joe. When we come back, Tom and I talk more about President Carter's legacy and what it means.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley's home for the Todd Allball Show.
CBS News Special Report. The two biggest deadly wildfires ravaging the Los Angeles area this week have burned at least 10,000 homes and other structures. Juan Perez in Altadena has lost his home in the Eaton Fire.
My kids were born here, raised them here, 20-some years, built this, and it's completely gone.
L.A. Fire Chief Kristen Crowley says almost 20,000 acres are burning in the Palisades Fire, and they're dealing with a new brush fire in the West Hills called the Kenneth Fire.
Over 60 fire companies from the Los Angeles City Fire Department, L.A. County Fire Department, and Ventura County Fire Department were initially dispatched to the specific incident. Additional resources have been requested and are en route.
CBS News meteorologist Rob Marciano.
Even after the winds die down, the smoke the next 24 to 48 to 72 hours through the weekend will be very, very dense. And when people start coming back to their homes over the weekend, they're going to have to deal with that as well. And no rain in the forecast until further notice.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
The Packers prepare for Philly. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Green Bay Packers face the Eagles in Philadelphia Sunday in the wild card playoffs. The Eagles have one of the top-ranked defenses in the league under coordinator Vic Fangio. I asked Matt LaFleur what makes them so tough.
You just don't see a whole lot of open space, a lot of gotcha plays. You're going to have to earn it because if they get you in third and long, it's a nightmare.
College basketball, two of the Badgers men's team dealing with injuries. Max Klesmet in a walking boot after injuring his right ankle. Nolan Winter, able to practice despite suffering a deep cut to his finger the other night. Wisconsin hosts Minnesota Friday night. NBA, the Bucks with a 121-105 blowout over the Spurs. A.J. Green with 14 points asked, how do you defend 7'3" Victor Wembanyama?
Just be physical and crawl up under him, try to make him uncomfortable, stab at the dribble. That's what coaches wanted us to do, and I think that's how you got to try and guard them.
That's the Bucks' A.J. Green. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Peach Wabba. Due to the L.A. wildfires and the devastation they've brought, actress Jean Smart says award shows should be tabled. The two-time Golden Globe winner and star of Hacks says award shows should not be televised and that all the revenue that the telecasts would have brought in should be donated to fire victims. Smart said going forward with the shows is a bad look for the entertainment industry. Keeping with the theme, the Oscars seem to be getting the message. According to Variety, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences says voting will be delayed for this year's awards. Voting for the various categories started January 8th, and the new deadline will be January 14th instead of January 12th. As a result, they will push the announcement of nominations back 2 days as well to January 19th. Still way too early just to see how the fires will continue to affect everyone in Southern California. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Peach Wabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Some flurries and light snow in the overnight, but accumulations will be well under an inch. We'll see west to northwest winds developing with lows dropping to the upper teens. On Friday, a mix of clouds and sunshine, some flurries, highs in the mid-20s. It's 21 at our studios.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
What's going on in Washington today as we move into 2025? Have your antenna up. Don't rely on all the media sources. Just your own wisdom, your own heart, your own gut. Listen to what they're saying about our friends and neighbors and family. Because we innately know these people that we live with every day in our communities. Don't allow words and thoughts to tear us apart. Hold fast to that which we know, which is good.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Earl Ingram.
The Republicans and Donald Trump want to impose tariffs. They say it's going to bring in $2.7 trillion.
That's what they say when they're trying to justify a tax reduction. Those broad tariffs are not good for the average American.
You know, Sandy, I'm not a guy that knows anything about calculus and any of those things, but I do know how to add and subtract. They're adding to the national debt.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Max Inc. Radio, original local music from Wisconsin, Saturday and Sunday, 6 to midnight. This weekend, we welcome brand new band Take Back the Sun, and Terry chats with Aaron Schulke about Wisconsin polka. It's Max Inc. on Civic Media. We are local music.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You're listening to the Matt Udon Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If your wardrobe is looking for a little spiffing up in the new year, don't worry. Civic Media's got you covered. You want to get some AUK gear? That's the place I broadcast out of. Just go to civicmedia.us/. Go to the upper right-hand corner. We got a store there. You can buy all kinds of cool casual gear to celebrate your love or distaste for Civic Media. It'll be a conversation starter either way. My special guest co-host, which you can find with me here every Thursday, is Tom Paulsowitz, one of the most reasonable men in politics, small business owner, Navy veteran, and two-time congressional candidate, and the notoriously tough nut to crack congressional 5th District.
Tom, impossible. Yeah.
So glad to be here with you, especially given your shared service to the U.S. Navy with President Carter, whom we're probably going to spend the rest of today talking about. I wanted to ask you specifically about that. And, you know, we've had a series of presidents who haven't served in the military of late, and yet presidents serve as the commander in chief. Our incoming president, by multiple accounts, has derided the military, disrespected armed service members. As someone who served and someone who has run for elected office and served in the very branch that Jimmy Carter served in, what are some of your thoughts in this moment as it relates to the president's relationship with the armed forces?
Yeah, and I'm actually going to go back because Jimmy Carter was also in the Submariner service.
I was just going to say the only president ever certified to be a submariner.
Right. And what people don't understand, though, is he was in the submarine service the same time Admiral Rickover was creating the nuclear submarine service. And he was instrumental. He was at the ground floor in putting systems together and putting the strategy together to be able to create a nuclear Navy, because it had never been done, obviously. But I think the biggest thing was, and I think this is a testament to who Jimmy Carter is he always looked at the long term. Everything he did, he looked at what is this going to be out into the future, not what's most expedient, not what's, you know, right in front of me. And, you know, I don't think that's just a military trait, but in the military, it served him well to be looking at how are we going to build this nuclear Navy, this nuclear submarine force that, one, you know, we can then have we can project out military strength around the world, but also protect the people who are on the submarine from deadly radiation. I mean, just fascinating thinking about how that was, you know, the beginning of that was. He was actually slated to go on the second nuclear submarine, the Seawolf, which was being built in 1953. And at that time, his father had passed away and he basically left the Navy to go run his peanut farm. But he took that consistency and that level of commitment, but also service.
Yes.
And applied it to everything else that he did in his life. And I think that's the, you know, one thing that military teaches people. You know, there are other ways to learn it, but it's the service for others. It's understanding that your role is not about you. It's about helping others get what they need in order to be able to achieve what they want. And, you know, and you and I have talked about this. That is not who Donald Trump is. Everything's about him. You know, so I'm not even going to bring him up in this context, because I think Jimmy Carter, his life is worth remembering. It's worth celebrating, because he is going to go down, maybe not as one of the greatest presidents we've ever had, but one of the greatest people who ever served as president.
A great American.
And then did all these other, you know, if he would have done just one of the things, he would be remembered. But just his entire life was spent in the service of others.
One of the very lesser known facts about Jimmy Carter is that he actually once spent 89 seconds in a melting nuclear reactor, which is like
turned a screw.
Yeah, what? Like
he turned one screw, yeah. Right? Because that was the length of time. You know, and I wish I would have known that, because one of my nuclear stories was, I remember laying on top of the nuclear reactor, changing the fluorescent light bulb above it. Mm. Obviously, the reactor was shut down at the time. But, you know, just precautions that you had to go through in order to be able to do those
things. Yes.
We're all learning on the fly, because nobody knew exactly how much radiation.
Yeah, how much Tom, we're having a little bit of trouble hearing you. Cardi, are you picking that up as well? We'll just give it a minute for your internet hookup to reconnect. I wanted to talk about one of the observations that our last guest, Joe Czarnecki, and again, my big thanks to Joe for joining us, who had met with President Carter many times throughout his lifetime. And he remarked upon Carter's statements that I'll never lie to you. There was a fascinating, critical memorial written by George Will. I believe it was in the Washington Post. And George Will took issue and sort of claimed that Jimmy Carter's, that the elements of his character, his commitment to character and truth telling, was sort of a put on, almost a pomposity, if you will. And yes. What I found fascinating about George Will's criticisms, and he said, no, Jimmy Carter lied, and these were his lies, okay? So again, big thing from Jimmy Carter is, I will always tell you the truth, I will never lie. And George Will took exception to that as part of this greater criticism of Jimmy Carter. But the only two lies that George Will could point out was, he claimed in his piece that Jimmy Carter had said that he was a nuclear physicist. I haven't been able to verify that.
Never claimed it.
It comes in the context of what you were talking about. He was one of the, on the forefront of the vanguard of this evolution of our military might, of our Navy. And the second lie that George Will claimed was that Carter had denied that he had derided Lyndon Johnson as a liar, and he said a tape proved that Carter had called Lyndon Johnson lying, cheating, and distorting the truth. It is highly ironic to me. It just smacks of all of these bizarre levels of weirdness. Like, first of all, if your two lies were about what is an indisputable military record of service and an evolving, hugely important element of our military strength and might, and the other one is about a private conversation had with respect to another president's propensity to tell the truth or lack thereof, if those are the two big lies that Jimmy Carter told, like, I'll take it. I wish that those were the lies that was the extent of the lying by every single president. Like, are you freaking kidding me? I just thought that was incredibly odd.
That was the beginning of the idea of normalizing.
Yes.
Right? The more you can normalize the idea that all the politicians lie, then the bigger lies make more sense. And they're no longer lies. They're just opinions, or that's just the way he speaks, or that's just how he feels about the situation. Right. So that, and that's been going on for a number of years. And that's why, you know, when I asked Joe about that question, like, you know, how did the Republican Party, how are they able to paint Jimmy Carter as weak, when he had done, you know, he had done some amazing things during his presidency, but he didn't attack Iraq, you know, Iran after the hostage situation. Yeah. And I think that just infuriated people who wanted something done.
Yes.
And, you know, but I think that both siderisms is something that's been going on forever. And if you can take somebody who said, I never lie, and paint them as a liar, well, then whatever you're saying, all the lies that you're, you know, spreading out there are palatable because everybody does it.
Well, and I think, you know, Joe spoke to, and one of the reasons that I think, especially some on the more conservative end of the spectrum, find Carter to be an easy target is because he was, during his presidency, largely sort of reviled even by the Democratic Party machine. He was not liked within the Beltway. He did not play congressional politics well. And he was sort of like the anti-politician. Because, you know, the truth telling, all of this, he just was not well liked amongst the political establishment. It occurs to me today that if you want to talk about presidents that actually support economically progressive policies and believe in the middle class, Carter would stand out as that. He wasn't far left, but what he believed in were these fundamental things, the equal treatment of people under the law, women's rights. When the church that he belonged to in Plains, Georgia, refused to admit black members, he and a bunch of friends were like, fine, we're leaving. We're going to start our own church, and did so. I mean, that is extraordinary. He appointed the first black person to ever be ambassador to the UN, the importance of housing, the environment. You can go on and on. These are things that truly have a direct benefit to regular working Americans. It strikes me again as an incredible historical juxtaposition that he was not liked within the political elite class, whether you are a Democratic elite, again, symbolized, as Joe mentioned, by the elite of the elite in the Democratic Party, the Kennedy family.
The Kennedys were so upset. Huh? Right, that Ted ran, right? And you know, he made the presidential, he made the White House accessible to normal people because he was a normal person. Lived in a $170,000 house his entire life, right? Yeah. $167,000 house his entire life. He said and he did things that helped ordinary people. Yes. And you're right. He was then vilified by both sides and didn't have a chance in 1980. And here we are today, because that election was a key swing point in our country.
Truly.
You know? And I always have to, you know, I fess up to this because I did vote for Ronald Reagan in 1980. I was 18 years old. It was my first election. And I bought into this idea that we needed strength and we needed to combat the Soviet Union. And what a terrible disaster that was. Mm. And, you know, so many things happened from there. But the kindness, the warmth, the compassion that somebody like Jimmy Carter brought to politics is something I hope someday we can get back to.
One of the enduring messages that I think Jimmy Carter stands for very clearly, and there are many. There are many excellent character traits and values that Jimmy Carter's life as a whole embodied. But one that I think, whether you are more conservative or liberal, no matter how you may have voted in 1980 or in 2024, that is unquestionably an American ideal, is that Jimmy Carter was a poor kid from a peanut farm in a tiny, tiny little town in Georgia, and he became President of the United States. That is unquestionably the best of us, the best expression of both the American promise, the American dream, and what democracies should help to foster and bring about. Folks, we ask you to join Tom and I. Your thoughts, complicated, your criticisms, whether we agree with them or not, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Again, this is quite a moment. When we come back, we're going to go to the text lines. We're going to go to the phones. And before we get out of today's show, I have been trying to keep a running sort of rough sketched out list of all of the causes that Jimmy Carter's life moved forward exponentially, causes that are universal values that the vast majority of Americans and humans stand behind. To me, nonpartisan causes that basically make life better for all of us, that Jimmy Carter fundamentally improved. Special guest co-host today, Tom Paulswitz, himself a former Navy veteran, himself a former submariner. He's joining me every Thursday. You can catch us always here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us as we revisit the legacy of President Jimmy Carter, who today had his state funeral earlier this morning. a funeral planned in every detail by President Carter. Because I have this characteristic in common with the president, maybe the only one. A little anal retentive about the details. So we're going to come back, continue this discussion. Join us all, because we're all about real news and great conversation here on the Civic Media Radio Network. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Keep it locked, y'all. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm a
This is 93.5 The Tap. Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
I drew my brother's name one year, and we went to the mall, and I said, hey, while you're in there, grab me a Christmas card. We're doing the gift exchange later. So he walks upstairs, gets the card, hands it to me. I sign it, Merry Christmas. Love, Pete. And that was my gift to him that I made him pick out, pay for, and retrieve. He's like, you are the laziest, cheapest. It was absolutely beautiful.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Here's what the WSJ had said after J6. This week has probably finished Donald Trump as a serious political figure. Boy, that hasn't aged well, has it?
No, not at all.
The Wall Street Journal. So after what they just said 4 years ago, Maggie, they couldn't bring it upon themselves to say that guy who did that shouldn't be anywhere near the White House again. Nope, couldn't do it.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
That first time seeing my son, I feel like my life did a 180. He really a definition of like why he loves somebody.
Through all the fatherhood's firsts, never stop being a dad. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a great show coming up after mine. You got Dom Salvia in the booth. His show follows mine every Monday through Friday. His starts at 4 o'clock. I'm here from 2 to 4. You want to get in? It is the last segment of the day. We're talking about President Jimmy Carter, whose state funeral concluded earlier today. Join us, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Joined today by my special guest co-host. He's with me every Thursday. Welcome back, Tom. So glad to have you.
So good to be here. I do want to mention, though, because I just read this, and I think it's a fascinating thing that Jimmy Carter's favorite song was Imagine by John Lennon. And when you think about that, you know, him being as religious as he was, you know, he was much more, he wasn't about my religion is the right religion and everybody needs to follow it. It was like, imagine if we can all come together and we can all get along. And I think that's just, to me, it embodies who he was and what he brought to our world.
I'm going to give sort of almost a listing of all of these causes that I think Jimmy Carter forwarded in really fundamental ways, accomplishments that we all benefit from. But I want to give all of you a chance to chime in on the call or text lines, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Tom from Jackson, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. Go ahead, sir. Thanks for your patience. Hello? Yes, go ahead.
Hi. What I'd like to mention is that one thing that's not talked about very much concerning Carter is that his bad decision of going after the unions, in particular the trucking unions, and by deregulating them, which affected hundreds of thousands of workers. And by doing that, that has turned a lot of the union base still against the Democratic Party to this day, where they cannot trust the Democratic Party. And I believe it's cost them some elections because of that. And my father had been a truck driver, and he felt that he'd possibly lost his job in the early 80s under Reagan because of how the laws had been loosened up because of Carter.
Yeah, I think it's a there. His presidential legacy, Tom, thanks so much for listening. Thanks so much for the call. It's an important point, and I think an accurate criticism. Again, I noted a bit earlier, there were very valid criticisms from the left as to some of Carter's approach. He was not a left progressive. He was a Democrat, but he was a very centrist Democrat. If you put today's political spectrum across Jimmy Carter, he would still be a Democrat, but he'd be about as far, like as close to the center of the spectrum as you can possibly get. And there are valid criticisms. Again, we had 440 days of hostages in Iran. He allowed the Shah of Iran to come to the United States for medical treatment. Yes. Roundly criticized for that. We had explosive inflation. People were waiting in the gas lines. Many things were extremely complicated. It's why he got primaried by Ted Kennedy. That's all part of, I think, almost any president, when you look at it, has you don't always get it right. And it is indeed complicated. Tom, your thoughts on Carter's more complicated presidential legacy?
Yeah, I think there's a lot there, though. And when you start to unpack it, though, I think from a standpoint, and I'll just say that, yes, he was a centrist, but I would say from the old paradigm, you know, he was center because the Republican Party has moved so far right at this point that I'm not sure where it is. But he always still took everything into account and tried to make the best decision possible, even though it wasn't the decision people wanted him to make. And I'll go back to just the Iran situation. You know, many people wanted him to go in and go get the hostages, but he knew that could create, you know, a war that would probably still be going on today if he had done something like that. So he took a step back and said, I'm going to do what I can. And then he was criticized for doing something.
For doing that.
He sent in helicopters to try to do a rescue attempt, and it didn't work. And he was criticized for doing something. So he was in a no-win scenario based on what you said before, that he didn't make the relationships he needed to make. And my guess is, and I was trying to get that out of Joe, my guess is if he'd go back and redo it, he could have. He would have spent more time creating relationships with people.
Yes.
So he had a better understanding of what people really wanted, not only inside of the Washington, but also outside.
One thing I do want to note about the Iran hostage situation, some historians have claimed that Bill Barr, dispatched by the Reagan campaign, basically opened a back channel and killed the deal that Carter and his diplomats had negotiated to bring those hostages home, largely to enable Ronald
Reagan. They
didn't
kill it. They delayed it.
Yes. They delayed it so that Reagan took
the election. Yes.
And if you ever want to know why Bill Barr may be the second most dangerous man on the planet, I have I think two shows about it in the entirety. You can check those out at civicmedia.us/shows. Let me go through the list with the remaining time that we've got.
Excellent.
He identified wealth inequality as one of the great challenges of our time. It remains so today. The Camp David Accords, he created a lasting peace between Israel and Egypt. They weren't able to extend it to Palestine, but that peace between Israel and Egypt continues to this day. He created a desegregated church, as I mentioned before. He embraced full and equal rights for women. He supported ultimately gay marriage. He was all about disease eradication, basically helped eradicate guinea worm. Housing, the environment, solar panels, service to others, the Department of Energy and Education, ethics processes, the Federal Civil Service, the national parks, pardoned the Vietnam draft evaders. The list goes on and on. More accomplished by that man than most of us could ever hope to achieve. Folks, that's going to do it for Tom and I this afternoon. Dom Salvia is next. Remember, I'll stand up for you.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap. Dom Salvia.
Next time, Earl Ingram will join me to discuss the results of Justice Juan Merchan's sentencing of the president-elect, whatever that is. Plus, it's Friday. Tell us something good. Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
Here's to a Wisconsin winter you will always remember. To playing outdoors in a winter wonderland. Here's to cozying up around the fire and holding someone close. And to staying downtown, where the food scene makes your heart sing. And to celebrating moments frozen in time. Here's to those who Wisconsin. Plan your winter getaway at TravelWisconsin.com. Sponsored by Travel Wisconsin.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Three of the largest wildfires burning in Los Angeles County, California, are 0% contained. The Eaton Fire in the Altadena area destroyed this woman's home.
I've lost everything. Yeah. Pictures. Memories.
The death toll in the Palisades and Eaton fires is now at least 7. CBS's Chris Van Cleve has been checking out damage in the Altadena area in the Eaton fire.
Towering flames threaten to overtake the highest point in Los Angeles, as well as the telescopes and key transmission towers atop Mount Wilson. The wind-fueled Eaton fire rained destruction down on the neighborhoods below, damaging or destroying more than 1,000 structures.
The latest fire in LA's West Hills area has prompted evacuations. New Orleans says it's bringing in a security expert ahead of Mardi Gras and the Super Bowl next month, just about a